Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is a dual Olympic gold medal winner and world champion. She represented Australia in the pool at both the London and Rio Olympics, and this year was a crucial part of the team in Tokyo, and among other medals, won gold in the women's 4x100m freestyle relay. For much of her career, she's competed alongside her sister. They made history as the first Australian sisters to compete in the very same event back in 2012, and she has no doubt inspired a whole host of young Australians along the way with her grit and determination. She's also a poet, writer, and storyteller. And it is my pleasure to welcome Bronte Campbell to Great Australian Lives. How are you, Bronte?
Hi, Laura. I'm good. How are you going?
I'm great. I'm honoured to have you on the show. You've had such an incredible life and so many exciting events to talk about. The last couple of months have been obviously in the wake of Tokyo. Have you actually had the chance to have a real break after, you know, the intensity of an Olympic Games?
Well, you know what? We actually had 2 weeks of sitting in quarantine to sit back and have a think about everything that had happened. So that was not necessarily a break that we had necessarily wanted to do, but it did force everyone to take 2 weeks off because there was no opportunity to do anything there. But yeah, I've actually been swimming for so long. I've learned to take the breaks when you can, and I've taken a really big break and staying fit and staying strong, but I haven't been back in the swimming pool. I've switched the swimming pool for the ocean because I know as soon as I get back in the swimming pool, I'm going to start timing myself, and I'm not ready for that.
Just on quarantine, I mean, obviously every other games you've competed in, you wouldn't have had that forced 2 weeks afterwards. Did it change, you know, being forced to be in a room and not have a lot to do and any distraction, did it change the way that you sort of processed the Olympic Games experience?
Yeah, it definitely does change it. Normally you come back, or normally you actually get a week with your team to go watch other events and debrief together, and that's where you form a really tight bond. So it's really sad that we didn't get that. It's a really good way to debrief just for people that understand it. So it's it was tricky going straight into quarantine for a lot of the team, I think. But I was pretty happy with my performances and happy with my whole experience. I think it's a harder thing to process when you're not around your friends and family and you want to be around them, especially if things haven't turned out the way you wanted. So I was pretty lucky, but it definitely does change it. And oh my goodness, when we got out of there, when we could finally leave and go back to friends and family who we hadn't seen for 8 weeks, that was a really nice moment.
Yeah, I can imagine too, as you sort of referred to there, if you weren't happy with your performance or if you're really unhappy with your performance, being forced to be alone with your thoughts for, you know, 2 weeks could be quite torturous. But you're lucky that wasn't the case for you, so that's great. In terms of, and I thought about this a lot, being, you know, very amateur sprinter back in the day, I thought when the Tokyo Olympics got postponed for 12 months, I could not get my head around, I mean, obviously you did, but how you re-prepare yourself. I mean, knowing that athletes get burnt out after they get to a peak and, you know, they have such specific training, as you well know, schedules to make sure you're right at the peak of your performance when you hit the pool or hit the track when the event happens. How do you recalibrate when the world says, sorry, you got to start again?
Yeah, that was a really interesting moment back in March of 2020 when we found out that the Games had been postponed. And not only that it had been postponed, but all our training venues were shut down. We had no idea what we were going to be doing. It was less than ideal at the time, but after 2 weeks of having completely off and taking stock to sort of reset and not rush into anything, I was like, well, this is sort of a gift in a way. Like, I've been given this gift of time, and we don't normally get this much time to prepare because we've always got a major meet every single year. So now that I've got the time, if I had time back in the day, what would I have wanted to do? And for me, that was doing rehab properly. I stripped out all my gym, started gym again from scratch, basically. Lost a lot of strength, but built it back up in a way that was going to really help my injuries. And that stood me in really good stead for this year, and it really contributed to my performances, but also my enjoyment, because I've been a lot less pain from my injuries. So I think for me, it was looking for the opportunities that lay in the decision to postpone the game. Obviously, there's heaps of downsides, but I can't do anything about the downsides. So just searching for the opportunity and then being able to capitalize on it. And I feel I was able to do that really well, and it really helped me this year. So in a way, it could have been better this year for me than it would have been the year before. You never know, but yeah, once I had the time to rehab properly and take a step back, it was actually quite good. And I know it's different for every single athlete. Like, everyone peaks at a different time. So
now, you've said in the past, Bronte, that you know you loved hanging out in the Olympic Village and mingling with all the other athletes from around the world. Obviously, this year it would have been different due to COVID protocols, and you wouldn't have got that much of that social time. Do you think that impacted your mental state, even your performance?
To be honest, I don't think it impacted my performance at all. But normally after we finish competing, that's when we can see everyone from other countries and really enjoy that time together with your competitors / your kind of, they're kind of like your colleagues in the end. So it's sad not to get that, especially as I'm fairly certain that was my last Olympics. So it felt like I didn't get to say goodbye to all those amazing people that I've met over the last 10 years. So I definitely wish that we could have had that. But at the same time, everyone in Tokyo was just so grateful that this was happening. You could see how much Japan had sacrificed to get us. So even though I was like, oh, imagine how good this could be, at the same time, we were looking around, even just before the game started, we were looking around like, we cannot actually believe that we're here. Like, we're in the village and we're just standing on our balconies being like, I cannot believe that this is actually happening. So there's a bit of almost surrealism going on in the village. We're like walking around like, this is sort of like a dream. So the fact that we weren't able to socialize wasn't really as big a deal, because so many of us
down the list
didn't know that it was going to happen. We doubted it for a long time.
Was the lack of crowd factor, did you factor that into your training for, you know, those big moments that you wouldn't have that atmosphere?
Look, everyone asks about the lack of crowds, but like, we're underwater, firstly. So we don't actually hear the crowd when you're swimming.
But when your head comes up, it'll be like, rah.
Yeah, well, when you're a breaststroker, right, as your head comes in and out of the water, you could really hear the crowd, but thank goodness I'm not a breaststroker, because that's a hard stroke. but actually, like,
it is.
Once every 4 years, and maybe once at the major meet, there's a huge crowd there. But majority of us for meets are done with nobody watching and no crowd and no atmosphere. So we're kind of used to it in a way. And then when we walked out on pool deck in Tokyo, there was a lot of loud music, and then you could hear the other athletes in the stands. So we don't normally get to hear the athletes. So other athletes are always in the stands, but because there's so much else noise going on, you can't hear them. But now you could actually hear your teammates like clear as a bell when they're yelling out to you. So that was actually quite a nice thing that happens, because there was no one in the stands. The only really big downside, I think, probably for the Japanese swimmers, in Rio, there was a Brazilian swimmer in my 100 freestyle final, and the noise that came when she walked out into the stadium, and she was a friend of mine, and like the smile on her face, and she just looked so happy. And then the lift that gave her, and the performance that she had was way better than she'd ever been before, and her fastest ever, even to this day. So I feel like for the Japanese swimmers, it was a bit, it was a bit of an impact there, but less
home side. Yeah. Just on, you know, preparation for, you know, an event like the 4x1, I whenever I see the Athletes Village and I hear that you're sharing rooms and, you know, you're in a single bed and all that sort of thing, I need a good night's sleep before anything, really, especially a physical performance. How do you cater for that, given, you know, you've got the world looking at you the next day and you're going to bed sharing a room in a room that's not yours. I mean, how do you prepare for the fact that you may not get a really good night's sleep before one of the biggest moments of your life?
Sleep is really important, and probably, like, yes, the night before is really important, but more importantly, because we do an eight-day competition, it's getting it across those 8 days. Like, one poor night's sleep is not really going to impact performance, but if you're not sleeping well for a whole week, that's going to be a really, really big issue. But we prep for it, and we know what we're in for. We know what the village is like. It's noisy. You've got roommates. You've got possibly uncomfortable beds. So we had already shipped over mattress toppers to make the beds a bit softer when we got over there. Everyone trials for a year before. You're trialing, like, which earplugs you want to use, whether you have, like, those little noise-canceling ones, whether you have the inner-ear ones, what works for you. I use like a weighted eye mask as well, just to stop the light, especially if your roommate's up and moving around late at night. You just adapt and have some strategies, really. But you're right; it's a pretty weird thing when it's such a big stage, but then there's so many little human things going on behind the scenes that it almost doesn't feel real.
It never fails to shock me when I hear, you know, they were sharing a room, sleeping in single beds, and, you know, half the bloody team had gastro or whatever. I always think, God. And then you walk out in front of the TV cameras, you know, and perform this incredible, you know, almost subhuman performance, when behind the scenes you're wearing an eye mask and earplugs just to get sleep. I can never get over it.
I love that you even see that, because everyone always assumes the performance, but there's always so much going on behind the scenes. And, like, I mean, Tokyo was pretty good, but in Rio there was things like our toilets didn't work and our showers didn't work, and you were like running around trying not to get sick, but, like, your toilet's overflowing into your own room, and then you're putting on your green and gold tracksuit and going and standing out behind the blocks and racing. And it's just, sometimes it can be very surreal, that that contrast between those two things.
Yeah, well, and especially when, you know, you're in an event where it could come down to point, you know, 0.2 of a second or something, and you just miss out or whatever, and the whole world is going or analysing, oh, well, you know, what happened? And you're like, well, you know, I was awake all night, or, you know, the people in the room next door were up with gastro all night, or, you know, it's just, as you say, very human things that are impacting what's going on in the pool. Do you have, like, are you superstitious? Do you have a routine you have to follow to get out there, a favourite meal, or are you pretty relaxed?
No, I'm not really superstitious. I think if I started collecting superstitions, I'd never stop. So I haven't done that. But everyone's got their routine that they do, and that's where I sort of get that comfort. I think that's what superstitions do for people. So obviously you have, like, you turn up at the pool 2 hours before, you start stretching, warming up, doing all your exercises, get in the warm-up pool about an hour and 10 out from your race, and it's going through all those motions, putting on your suit, heading to the cool room 20 minutes before your race. That whole process, which you've done so many times, that's it's not a superstition, but it gives me probably the same comfort that others get from being superstitious.
Fascinating stuff. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives, and Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. Visit TobinBrothers.com.au. Our guest tonight is Olympic gold medal winner and world champion swimmer Bronte Campbell, and more with Bronte in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
A time that in relays it wasn't really a proud honour to be a part of the team, and they really picked it up, and it was about being a proud member of a relay team, really working on those changeovers.
Yeah, we've definitely reprioritised relays, and I think that that's come back to the culture of the swim team and what we've been able to create. Now there's a performance culture that's involved with that as well, that's seeing all of the success that's happening for a lot of young people at these Olympic Games and for some of the swimmers that are not quite so young.
Lovely touch between Emma and Kate on the right-hand side, Bronte Campbell on the far left, and the newbie in the team, the 19-year-old Meg Harris.
Ladies and gentlemen, the anthem of Australia. Yes, ma'am. Australia. Hokkano Enso desu.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is international swimming sensation Bronte Campbell, who alongside her sister Kate became the first Australian sisters to compete in the same swimming event at the Olympic Games in London in 2012. And of course, she was at Tokyo for us this year as well. And what you just heard there was a little snippet from that. Bronte, can you take us back to Japan? We've just been talking at length before the break about that experience, given that it was COVID times. Were you able to see any of Tokyo while you were there?
No, we weren't allowed out of the village. I mean, I think at that point, most of Tokyo was actually in lockdown. There was no traffic on the roads. There was barely anyone out on the streets. So, we weren't allowed to go out. And just as a rule in our team, well, it's not really a rule, it's just what we do. We would never go out and do anything in the city until the swimming's finished, until every single person's finished competing. Because some people finish their programs a bit earlier, but we wait until we can do something as a team. And then, then this year we obviously finished up and we're on a plane the next day anyway. So there wasn't really any time to get out and see anything, which I was really sad about, because Japan's a beautiful country and there's some lovely people on the streets holding signs for us as the buses went past. And it's always nice to be able to explore that country a bit and share it with the people who are hosting you. But that wasn't an option this time.
Yeah. Well, you saw the airport. Now, you, as we know, you are so close with your sister Kate. You've ridden this wave with her for a lot of the time. Did you get to spend isolation in a room with her, or were you two separated?
No, Kate actually stayed on a few days in Tokyo because she was up for election for the IOC Athletes Commission. So she had to stay until the end of that election. So she stayed an extra 3 days and then came home. She ended up quarantining in Brisbane while the rest of us quarantined in Howard Springs. So no, I didn't actually get to see her. I mean, we finished our races, said goodbye, and then I saw her 2.5 weeks later.
And just talking about family, you've got an interesting upbringing in terms of the fact that you're actually born and raised in Malawi and moved to Australia in 2001. Tell us about Malawi. I mean, what was your childhood like growing up there?
Malawi's a very, very different place than Australia. It's this tiny little country. It's a developing country. I think we had one traffic light in the city that I grew up in, and it probably didn't work most of the time. But I was little. I was 7 when we moved to Australia, and I do remember landing here and just being like completely overwhelmed by the whole thing.
Look at all the traffic lights.
Yeah, the traffic lights, there's a lot of people, everything moves very quickly. There was like this garbage truck that used to come around, you know, the one that's got like the little arm that like picks up the trash and empties it. And I just we used to absolutely love that. We used to watch it every single Monday morning.
And your mum was a synchronized swimmer, and she actually taught you how to swim, didn't she?
She did. So swimming's sort of this love that's been passed down through the women in my family. My gran was also a swimming teacher. She used to teach kids in the backyard pool, and mum did synchronized swimming and taught me and some of the other locals how to swim. But then when we moved to Australia, that's when I really decided I wanted to. My goal was to go to the Olympics. From right when I was 7, I decided I wanted to be an Olympic swimmer, and found my coach in Brisbane, and that's where my journey really, really started.
You decided at seven you were going to be an Olympic swimmer. It was sort of a given that you would follow the pool in life, but it sounded like you really were. There was sort of another career aspiration that you had.
No, I mean, I literally decided when I was 7 years old, and I was like, okay, great. What's the earliest Olympics I could get to? I'll be 17, about to turn 18 in 2012. I reckon that's the one I can get to. And that was 11 years. And I was like, okay, great. I'll just train for 11 years and then I'll go to the Olympics, which sounds so straightforward, you know, like your seven-year-old mind. It was not very straightforward in the end, but it did end up happening. I mean, I obviously had heaps of other interests along the way, and loved playing in some other sports, and it's like always good at school, et cetera, et cetera. But like for me, it was always, I just decided one day and that was it.
Imagine if the rest of us had that sort of perseverance. And now you were second of five siblings, as you know. Your oldest is Kate, two younger sisters, and your younger brother, Hamish. Now, younger brother Hamish has cerebral palsy. Are you happy to tell us a little bit about the impact he's had on your life?
Of course. So Hamish, he was actually born on my birthday. So we share a birthday 4 years apart, and he's amazing. There was trauma during his birth, and that contributed to his cerebral palsy. So he requires full-time care. My mum's his full-time carer. But he's amazing because he's often, at the moment, he has a lot of health issues and he's often in a lot of pain. But he is like the most optimistic, most beautiful person you've ever seen. He might have had a really bad day, but then he saves this like gorgeous smile just for when you walk through the door. So Amish has always been a bit of perspective for me, because how can I come home from a training session and be upset that my training session didn't go well, when like Hamish has had to get everything done for him his whole life, and everything's so much more difficult for him. And I'm walking around and doing something and pursuing my dreams. So it's a really good check for me to be like, okay, this is a small thing that I'm doing. I'm swimming. It's not life and death. It's something that I want to do and I've chosen to do. And seeing the fact that Hamish gets lots of his choices taken away from him, but he makes the most of it. That's been a really good grounding thing for me throughout my whole career, just putting a little bit of perspective around what I do.
And does he celebrate in your wins and follow your career as well?
Hamish is probably not cognitively able to realize what we're actually doing. So, and he's also vision impaired. So he can't actually see us swim, but he loves going in the crowd because you get like this atmosphere and everyone's cheering. Actually, he either loves or hates it. It kind of depends on the day. Someday he might love it, but other days he might think it's a bit much. But what he does love is he absolutely loves the national anthem. Like when the Australian national anthem plays, I think because when it plays at home, when mum and dad are watching and he's with them, they're really excited and he picks up on that. So whenever the Australian national anthem plays, he like absolutely loves it. It's probably one of his favourite songs, which is very sweet. So you may not know that me and Kate are on the podium singing the national anthem, but he's still sharing in the moment in his own way.
This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Olympian Bronte Campbell, and more with Bronte in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And tonight our guest is Bronte Campbell, OAM, three-time Olympian, who for most of her career has competed alongside of her sister Kate. It must have been so special to have shared so many moments with Kate, Bronte. Tell us a little bit more about your relationship. I'm sure, like all sisters, there are ups and downs, but you would have pushed each other to perform better, I'm sure, too.
Yes, yeah, so Kate and myself, from right when we were very young, we used to sit in the back of the car going to training and be like, oh, we're going to go to the Olympics together. Like, it was something we always wanted to do together. At that point, we were actually doing completely different events from each other, but we ended up competing in the same event. So most of the time, competing with each other, I think most people think we're competing against each other. But the power that it gives you when there's someone else in the race who you know and love and you also want them to do well, someone else in the call room, which is a very lonely place, who you can connect with, and the strength that that gives you. I think it's been incredible, and we've trained together for our whole swimming careers. We've always had the same coach. I mean, we've always had the same coach since 2001, which is a 20-year partnership, which has been incredible. But we see each other every single day and are pushing each other every single day. So often, because objectively, like Kate wins over me a lot of the time. She beats me more than I beat her. That's just what's happened in our career. So I think a lot of people look at that and think, oh, wow, like how do you deal with coming second? And I sort of look at it as without Kate and without that dynamic that we have between each other and the ability to push each other, I may not even have ever got to second. They think without Kate, I'd be first. But I think without Kate, I might be eighth or 10th or 12th or not even doing it at the level that I am now. It's very easy to think that it's a rivalry, but I think you put it really well in that we've been able to do it together and compete together and share these huge experiences. And whenever the competitiveness, because you're right, it does become difficult to manage sometimes, but whenever that competitiveness kicks in, we just remind each other that this is a small segment of our lives and we've got a long way to go after that. So there's no point ruining it over a swimming race. Like, what a silly thing to fall out over. Like,
sounds like you've got great perspective. And just on that, I mean, and the afterlife after swimming, you and Kate have been working on your book called Sister Secrets, Life Lessons from the Pool to the Podium. And as I mentioned in the intro, you're a writer and a poet and, you know, you've got that in you as well. Who is that targeted for?
So Sister Secrets, that came about, a librarian messaged Kate on Instagram and said, do you guys have a book out or could you recommend any books for 15-year-olds-ish girls or boys? Because I've got some books in my library and they're all written by male professional sports stars and I've got nothing to recommend to girls that want to keep going. And that was what sparked us to actually sit down and write the book. And it's really, I mean, it's not just for that age group. It's probably for a bit older as well, but it was things that I wish people had told me when I first started swimming or first started making the national team and just the things that we've learned through our journey. It's not supposed to be like a preachy book on how to. It's just what we've learned through our many experiences. And probably the main point of the book is that even though Kate and myself have had many of the same experiences, we've had very different journeys to get there and also different perspectives. So it's that idea of not comparing yourself. I think that's something we all do, but especially when you're younger, in those teenage years and early 20s, you're constantly comparing yourself to other people and trying to find the right way to do things. And Kate and myself have both had to find not the right way to do things, but our way of doing things and how to make that right for yourself. So that was where the start of the book came from. And then it was a great experience writing it with Kate. We set up a little Google Docs and we wrote every single word of it. It was quite special to be able to share that with her as well.
Tell us about your coach. You mentioned before you've been with him for a long time, Simon Cusack. I mean, it might be an obvious question, but how instrumental is he to your success, would you say?
He's the most instrumental person to my success, definitely. I met Simon when I was 7 years old and I was this scrawny little kid who just arrived in Australia. And he took me to 3 Olympic Games and 2 Commonwealth Games, 5 World Championships, 2 Pan Pacific Games. It's amazing what we've managed to achieve together. And a lot of my mindset and how I operate as a swimmer comes from him as well. It hasn't just been technical and in the water. It's also that mindset of it doesn't necessarily matter how you feel on the day. It only matters what you're able to do. And that takes away that fear of nerves for me. Everyone gets nervous. Anyone who says otherwise is 100% lying. Walking out behind the blocks is just the most intense feeling. Like, you feel like you're going to throw up. Your stomach is just an absolute knot. You're often shaking when you can't control your hands. It's a very intense moment, but realizing that it's okay to feel like that. It doesn't matter that you feel like that. You are still able to perform. That's a big thing that Simon gave to us at a very young age, being like, it doesn't matter. If how you're feeling on the day, you're your body knows what you're going to do. You've done it a million times in training, so just trust in that.
And that pressure that you refer to in terms of walking out to the pool and your stomach's in knots, and have you got better at dealing with that over the years, or is it every time you walk out in front of a crowd, it's the same, that's that same thing that sort of smacks you in the face?
Look, I don't think it goes away. I think what you said there, you get better in dealing with it and having strategies on how to deal with it. If you're not nervous when you walk out, I mean, it's a symptom of how much you care about what you're about to do. To be honest, I also love the feeling. Like, I described it like it was horrible there, but there's also this undercurrent of just like pure excitement and exhilaration that goes with it as well. If I were to describe that same thing to you, that could also be describing extreme excitement, right? I just reframe it in that way. It's like, it's nerves, but it's also excitement. And I chose to be here and I want to be here. And so before I dive in the pool, when just before they blow the whistle, I always look down the lane. And even though it feels like my heart's about to jump out of my mouth, I just make sure I have a little smile, because I'm like, this is what the 7-year-old wanted all those years ago, and you're actually doing it. And that's a really helpful moment for me. And also, my poor competitors, they hate it that I do that. Sometimes they look over and they're like, I looked over before my race, I just saw you like grinning. And they're like, they're obviously extremely nervous as well. And they're like, what on earth is this girl doing? Like, why is she smiling in this moment? So it's not supposed to put them off, but sometimes it does, and we have a bit of a laugh about it.
Oh, Carl Lewis did it. He was famous for smiling all the way through a race. So, you know, if it works, it works. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, tobinbrothers.com.au. Our guest tonight is Olympic gold medalist Bronte Campbell, and we'll be back with her in just a moment. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is gold medal winner and world champion swimmer Bronte Campbell, who's represented Australia at the elite level for years, including 3 Olympic Games. Now, Bronte, you said earlier that Tokyo would be your last Olympic Games. Paris isn't far away. Are you a bit tempted?
Everyone keeps saying to me, Paris is not far away. And I'm like, Paris is 3 years away. And just remember that the pandemic has not even been going for 2 years left yet. And that feels like a whole lifetime. So 3 years is still a long time. I'm always tempted. As soon as I've had a break, and then you watch other sporting things, and I know the Winter Games are coming up, and I'm sure when I watch them, I'm going to be like, oh my goodness, could I go another one? But for me, it's about taking a bit of time, taking a bit of step back and doing a few other things in my life, and then making the decision sort of as a choice between different alternatives. I've been doing the same thing now for so long. I want to make sure I explore other things and make sure that I'm not just choosing it because I think it's the only thing I can do. And then if I choose to go back to it, I mean, I'm still training now, but if I choose to go all the way through to Paris, I feel like it'll be a proper committed choice, as opposed to just like, oh, well, this is all I am. This is all I can do is swim.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Bronte Campbell, because I know that there are a lot of sports people, as you would well know, who get to the end of their sporting career and are faced with sort of, you know, a brick wall. I mean, who am I? What do I do next? What else do I have? What other skills do I have? And many of them can fall into quite a deep depression, and they need to discover themselves and their identity and the person they are outside of that sport. You're lucky that you have writing and poetry. You're a great storyteller. You have other things, you know, and as you, it sounds like you're really, you know, investing in exploring those talents as well. Is part of that because you know you need to find something else after swimming, or it's sort of organically evolved?
No, it's definitely, you definitely explained that well, that it's been very well documented what happens when your sport is your core identity and then you stop. And so it's been very considered on my behalf to not do that. And just just on that. I'm lucky that I get to do things and work with brands and people who understand that I'm not the most flexible in terms of my schedule because I am still training, but they're willing to work with that. So I've been working with SodaStream recently, and they've been a great partner in that they're allowing me to explore and learn through working with them, but also allow me to keep training and be adaptive in that way. So I think it's two-sided. It's definitely on my behalf wanting to do those things, but then from companies, it's them acknowledging that they want to help you even before you get to the end of your career. So that's that's been a really good thing I've seen happen in the last few years.
You might not like this label, but given the following you have on Instagram, 80,000 followers, can you put influencer to your CV as well? Bronte?
I don't think I can put influencer on my CV. I do not see myself that way. I don't know why. I just swim, and social media has just sort of happened and grown like very slowly over many years, and I think most people follow me because they I actually don't know why they follow me. They must like swimming. But I don't know. Influencer is a weird tag, isn't it? Not dissing on anyone who's actually an influencer. I think it's amazing people build different brands from absolutely nothing. That seems incredible.
It's actually quite difficult.
About it. It's incredibly difficult. Like, I know everyone pays out on it, but like they shouldn't, because not everyone can.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You're in high demand from big companies like SodaStream who want to partner with you. What sort of a process do you go through to vet those brands to make sure that they sit well with who you are and your philosophies?
I mean, I only ever want to partner with someone who fits what I'm all about. And I mean, when SodaStream approached me, I've loved them for years. I love the fact that it's sustainable. It's trying to cut down on those reusable bottles. And on top of that, hydration is something I'm actually terrible at. So anything that spices that up a bit for me is amazing. But you're right. It's about talking to the brand and making that what they're about and their values is the same as your own. Because it honestly doesn't make sense to partner with someone who's not on the same page as you. And it's not authentic and it's not real then. But yeah, when I first started talking with SodaStream, like I said, I've actually used their product for years anyway. So I was just excited, especially getting some fun new flavors and all the rest of that stuff, you know. That's always a bit cheeky and fun as well.
Well, speaking of authentic and real, that is exactly what you have been in our show tonight. Thank you, Bronte Campbell, for being with us. And if you are wanting to follow the lady who doesn't want to be known as an influencer, you can follow Bronte on Instagram at Bronte_Campbell and join the 80,000 who already watch her on the gram. It's been really fun and a really great learning experience to know more about your life. Thank you for being on Great Australian Lives.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you've enjoyed our chat with Bronte Campbell tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. And, of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.